the wheels on the, you know, thing go, you know what there is. They go round and round. It's the news, according to me. Good Thursday morning. It is 7:53 already, a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am in the Eastern Standard Time zone currently. I have been for the last week. I have not been in the Central Time. I haven't been in any other time zone it's been over a week. Yeah. What am I doing here? Let's see. I can't remember what my schedule was like last week. I've already disengaged. I was already disengaged before I left work. I was already on vacation. Some might say I never actually show up, but it's a let's see what this thing says. When was the last time I was? Let's see here. I might even want to look at this because they might have, I'm always hesitant to look at my schedule, my work schedule, when I'm not on the docket. What happened to my, what's going on here? I'm supposed to have a thing around my foot for the dog, and the dog is just walking off. All right, so we got, I don't know. I can't find it. It's not with it. There, it's popping up. Let's see here. I've been off since, last Tuesday, I guess it was. Yeah, so I've been off for over a week. Yes, and even, anyway, let's talk about what's in my cup. I've got my chai, my Big Train chai with Almond Joy creamer. And I've got a freshly brewed batch of sweet tea with peaches in it. The elixir. Dealing with my little puppy dog here. Gotta do that. I just made it last night, in fact, because I drank all the other. I think if you happen to watch the show. If you listen to the show, I really am checked out, apparently. And we're going to be checking out again today. Tonight, we're going to be, tomorrow morning, we're going to be sailing the little sailboat over to Chicago, to Chirac, to check out the ongoings, the things going on there. Ongoings. Taking our bikes over there. There's a thing called Bike the Drive on every year. It used to be on Memorial Day weekend. Now it's on Labor Day weekend. And we, I don't know how they do that because it helps to fund the park systems. You pay to, they close down Lakeshore Drive for 15 miles. You ride up one way and you ride back the other way. It's a big deal. So you ride 30 miles and it helps to pay for the park department, parks services. Because, you know, they don't tax you enough in Chicago to pay for those things. So they have to raise more funds, constantly raising money for something in Chicago. You know, you pay for the toll road, you pay for toll, everything you do is tolls. The amount of money that gets sucked into that place is unbelievable. If you stop and think about it, they have taxes on things that you don't realize. They tax water bottles in Chicago. If you buy a bottle of water in Chicago, you wonder why it's $3 for it's probably $5 now for a bottle of water in Chicago. The reason that it costs so much is because of the taxes that are involved. They started a program where they thought they were going to raise, $80 million by taxing water bottles. And then, of course, people stopped buying water bottles in Chicago. And they already had the money spent. Because they're going to get this $80 million. We're going to put that towards something. I don't remember what it was. So they went ahead and spent the money out of the general fund. I guess they screwed that. This was during... in fact, I hadn't planned on talking about any of this. By the way, I want to talk about this, the whole thing in Chicago. Brandon Johnson turned out to be a worse mayor than the previous one. He's literally making her look like she knew what she was doing, like she was competent. That's how bad this guy is. They went from bad to badder. Johnson is a man child. He's a grown man in a little. He's a little kid in a grown man's suit. Unbelievable, this guy. He's recently made some comments. He was on Morning Joe, I think it was, and he was making some comments about. And Morning Joe was asking him a straight yes or no question. This is unusual for Morning Joe. But he was trying to give him a chance in this whole thing. He said, "Don't you think that 5,000 more cops on the on the streets would help to prevent crime?" He would never answer the question. He squirmed on the question every time. He presented it to him many, many different ways. Every time Johnson would come out with something else, something different, some response that was squirming away from saying he obviously doesn't believe that it will help. He doesn't believe that more cops will help deter crime. Now, I understand you can. It doesn't necessarily mean there won't be any crime. But law enforcement is a big part of creating a peaceful society. The larger part, let me go a little further with this. Cops are all great. It's all well and good. Keeps people in line. That's called external discipline. Now, the thing about the founding fathers and what they really intended for us as a nation was that we would be self-governed by a set of moral standards and within our heart internally. Not to be imposed upon by, here's the law, you will obey it, and we have all these people here to make sure you obey it. That's not the way that the founding fathers intended it to be. In socialism, and especially when you start to become godless as a city, county, nation, whatever you are, state, and I don't hesitate to say this, the left wing left wing of the Democrats, they might talk about God. They don't like to talk about Jesus. They don't like to talk about the Messiah. They don't talk about any kind of Judaic Christian God. They don't like that. Some of them will pretend like they're Christians. Oh, I was just out here, in the steps. Cory Booker, who's the other guy? He kind of hangs out with occasionally. They're out there on the bleachers having some kind of sit-in. This is the kind of stuff, again, first of all, now nobody's showing up for this stuff anymore. Because it's interesting how this happens. All of a sudden, the DNC has like $15 million. They're ridiculously low on funds. Where did all the money go? Why all of a sudden is there no money for the Democrat Party? Why are all these organizations that were left-wing and television shows, people like Stephen Colbert and other shows that are, all of a sudden there's no money for these guys? They were losing $40 million a year, and they found that somehow worthwhile. Who was it that found it worthwhile to dump $40 million into the toilet every year? They must have felt like they were getting something for their money. Well, where was the money coming from? Because all of a sudden, the money's cut off. And we can't afford that now. We can't afford this $40 million a year. We can't afford this and that. But all these different organizations that are all of a sudden going under. I wonder why. Remember a little thing called DOGE that discovered a thing called USAID, and also discovered a lot of funding to organizations that were kind of sketchy and they couldn't trace the money everywhere. All these shell companies. Well, gee, maybe, just maybe, some of that money was sloshing around and happened to spill on some of these organizations and there was billions of dollars here we're talking about, folks. It's just, they were throwing millions of dollars at things to get results. And it's just, all of a sudden, the money's dried up. You don't have to connect the dots here. You just have to look at cause and effect. This is, okay, we shut the money off here. We're upstream here. Let's go ahead and put a dam here and let's see what dries up down below where all this water was running to. Oh, look, there was all kinds of places this water was going underground and popping up over there and popping up over there. Those lakes are drying up over there. This water source must have been feeding that lake over there and that pond over there. And that little stream and that creek and over there. It's just all of a sudden you find out. And it seems to be that is the case with USAID. I didn't mean for that to rhyme. It just did. Because I'm a poet. I don't even know it. I'm a poet who drinks chai. It's just some interesting things like that come together, and we have to, you know, it kind of makes me go, or sometimes, huh. Once in a while, a couple other things in the news. This whole thing with the godless thing, the party is not, and I'm not saying the Republicans are either. In fact, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor or advisor, and I'm also not a theological expert. Thank God. But I have to say, the left has this undertone, this underpinning of cynicism towards traditional Christian values, Christian beliefs. There's a whole lot of really bad theology out there, folks. And unfortunately, some of it comes from the church and churches, things people who would call themselves churches. Now, I'm not going to say if they're saved or not. I'm not going to. All I can say is the theology behind some of this stuff, some of the motivational theology behind some of these things. It literally leads people off into a world of just destruction. It's just not healthy. It's not good. And I'm going to touch on one of those as we go further into this. I think I'll talk about that at the end of the show, near the end of the show, because it's a few of the things I want to talk about first. We're going to get into this whole thing that happened in Minneapolis with the shooting. And how the media portrayed it, how it's all come about, everything that's been happening here. First of all, Kilmar Abrego, I probably didn't pronounce his name right. The the Maryland man, as he was referred to, is a man from Maryland. He's lived there for 12 years. Apparently, he doesn't speak English well enough to have a press conference. Now, I know what they were doing here. I guarantee you this guy speaks English. In fact, I've seen video of him speaking English. But he goes to do this press conference, and he has a translator there. Now, I don't know whose idea it was. My understanding was that the lawyer put him up to this. There are a few different reasons for this. The main one is this. You have less of a tendency to say something stupid if you have a translator. In fact, if they put a translator there who's a lawyer, that's even better, because now you've got somebody in between who can translate very carefully in legal terms, legal ease. Or someone who's been briefed, even if they're not a lawyer, if they have a concept or wrapped around a legal briefing. So the reason, here's the reason. I have preached before. I've spoken messages to people, taught, learned stuff. I learned stuff to people, helped them learn it. It helps to have a translator there. It's interesting because when you speak, like when I was in Africa, I spoke a couple times and I was just a kid. Man, I can't believe it. And one of the things that happens is you'll say a little bit and then you wait and you wait for the translator and then you say something a little bit and you wait for the translator and you, it's kind of a, usually in sentences or half sentences. It's early, folks. This is early. I've been camping for the last few days, and it is. I was up late last night, trying to get ready for the sailing boat trip. We just got home. I was driving down the road in the motorhome yesterday, and the tire blew out. The front left tire blew out on the motorhome, and I mean, it was quite the event, quite exciting, I must say, very exciting, and. Yeah. A couple hours later, I was back on the road and driving down the road. It's pretty amazing. It's quite something, I must say. But anyway, got home a couple hours later than I had planned. 3 or 4 hours later than I planned. Which kind of ate up most of my day. I've got some things I got to get ready for the boat. Which is going to lead us to being there probably to the boat later today than we were planning on. We're just going to want to get up bright and early tomorrow and sail off for the big city. Anyway, I was talking about the whole thing. I was talking about translation, translators. It gives you an opportunity. You can actually form. It's interesting what happens in that cadence of things. There's a cadence that starts to develop with your. With your interpreter, your translator, or whatever. So what happens is you start to speak, and then you make a statement, and the other person says it, and then you make another statement, and it gives you that pause, gives you a moment to think and keep and collect your thoughts, and actually, I think it's the quality. It takes longer, but the quality of the of what you want to say actually, I think, improves because of. Your ability to think through things before you say it. And it's just an interesting concept. So you don't, you're less likely to misspeak because you're more conscious of what you're saying. You're going to say it in a way that the translator can, you know, interpret it properly, to make it simple so that they can make the translation. You're basically talking to the translator and having them convey an idea. So the it's just an interesting concept. And it is kind of disconnecting with the group. However, it also gives you an opportunity to think through things before you say them. And it's, so there's also a slight air of authority that comes with it as well. It's kind of weird. It's a weird dynamic. So the this thing about what he was doing here, I'm pretty sure that he just didn't want to come out and speak to the public. Didn't want him just answering questions. It buffered things for him. He didn't have to be the one answering the questions. So, anyway, the guy is he doesn't want to go back to wherever it is he's supposed to go back to, where he's a citizen from. They brought him back here, and of course, the left thought that they won that battle. We won. We got him back here. Yeah, the Wareland man's back. Oh yeah, Trump lost. Now they're going to extradite him to Uganda. He is. Okay, well, you don't want to go back to wherever it was, because they're going to put you back in prison, which is his situation in prison there was not one of necessarily any hardship. However, they're, the way I understand it, and they are now, he came back here to face charges that were brought against him. Because, you know, that's what the left wanted. They wanted to come back here. Well, you come back here, you're getting charged with some offenses. And then they decide they're going to go ahead and extradite him now. He doesn't want to go back to this other, his home country. Okay, well, then we're going to send you to Uganda. He doesn't speak the language there. I don't even know if he knows anybody there. We're just going to drop you there. There you go. Whatever you want to do. Good luck. We're all counting on you. It's one of those kind of weird things where you want to screw around. There you go. You want to make this, you can make it easy or you can make it difficult. So part of me, though, this whole thing about these sending these people back. Okay, you've committed crimes here. We're going to send you back to your home country. Oh, well, that's not punishment. How about they go back to their country after they've served their time? The whole reason for the jail thing is to keep them separated from society and keep them and to have some kind of punishment for what they've done. Some kind of penance, where the word penitentiary comes from. I don't believe in penance as far as the way the Catholic Church does, but the point is they should be incarcerated. They should be, part of their punishment should be that they are locked away from society for a while, that they are locked in prison, that there's some kind of accountability for what they did. And it's sending them back to their home country. I'm not sure that that's a punishment. Is their home country going to lock them up? How are they going to get treated there? In some countries, they probably be treated like heroes. Or the cartels that they work for here in this country probably have enough clout there that they can make sure that they don't spend any time in prison there, or that their prison experience is not that bad, which, because, they send them back to a corrupt country where the politicians are in bed with these cartels. I don't know. I'm not sure that's exactly the right thing to do. I'm just saying. I don't know, because I don't know. It's not because I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know. I mean, I can make something up, but it's, Now, having said that, part of the issue with the Maryland man is that there's all kinds of charges against this guy. Christy Noem actually came out and said something about some of the charges this guy has had against him that the media just simply isn't talking about. He should be in prison somewhere. Certainly doesn't need to be in this country. He's not here legally anyway. It's not an asylum thing. It's just, he just wants to be here because he can get away with everything. Anyway, so Trump is, speaking of crime, Trump is sending the National Guard all over the place now. Sent the National Guard to D.C. I think we're pushing 2 weeks now without a homicide, which I think is an all-time record. There was a couple stretches of 7 days where they didn't have any homicides in D.C. And, of course, all the politicians on the left, they're saying, oh, there's been other times. They started naming times back in 1962. It went they're talking about all these different times. There's like seven other different times that in our nation's history where there wasn't a homicide in a week. Well, gee. Okay, so it's no big deal then. How many hurricanes have struck the nation? But it's a big deal. The next one's always the big deal. It's always the biggest, largest, most climate change-ish one that's ever been, and we have to get, we put more taxes on SUVs. So we have all this rhetoric going around about this whole thing with the National Guard, and now he's now sending the National Guard. I think he's talking about doing it to Chicago. Several cities within red states. Now he was talking about, first of all, cities within red states because the governors were okay with it. Now the problem is, within these red states are red city or blue cities. There are always places within red states where there's this blue stranglehold, usually some of the larger cities. For example, Texas, if you go to Austin, Texas, it's still Texas, but it's not Texas. It's a much more artsy-fartsy. And it seems to go along with the whole thing of lefty wefty, because it seems to be the same thing. It just seems to go together. I don't know if it's universities that are there that are prop. I don't know what I don't know that much about University of Texas, and I don't know all the universities that are down there, state universities, whatever they are, where they are. I would assume there's probably a major university in Austin. You could probably trace everything back to there for why the philosophy is what it is. Just saying. Because, you know, I was out here in this, the country folk out here who just do nothing but, you know, pick the corn out of their teeth with a piece of baling wire because, you know, got some big gaps on their teeth. We just use twine for floss. Drive around in our pickup trucks and just have our flags flying around the back, and then it's all we are out here. And then, oh, Trump, Trump, yeah. There you go. That's what happens out here. Whereas the sophisticated people who live in the cities, who are so smart and intelligent, they come from university and they have much higher IQ, and they're much more. Oh, by the way, I'm standing right now on the ground of the Hipitwa Indians, and I want to acknowledge that I'm standing on their ground, and that makes me better than you, because I'm acknowledging it, because I'm still standing on it, but I'm acknowledging it now, and that makes me better than you, because I am so, you know, aware of my, where I'm standing, I guess. I don't know. And of course, before that, whatever people group was there before that they took over. So the National Guard is going out there and making a difference. And most people, this is another one of those 80-20 issues that the Democrats, the left wing of the party is just out of their minds. He's taking over the country. This is what despots do. This is what... And of course, most of the people are saying, I just want a place where my kids can go out and play in the park and be. One of the things that's interesting, I think it was Joseph Watson, what was his name? Joseph. He has a video thing on YouTube and probably something else. And he's got a couple channels. And he played some video of Europe. And he's from England. And he played some video of, I think he lives here in the States though, what it was like on the beach there back in the 60s, as opposed to what it's like on the beach now with all the migrants basically have taken over the beaches there. The people who've come along, you know, what's happened and what the differences between the culture then and the culture now out on the beach. And just how they've trashed everything, and it's not a safe place to be, what it used to be, and what he was showing these little video clips of what it was like back then and what it's like now. Now I could go on with this for a long time. I could talk about what life was like back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in high schools, in school, you know, the life that the children grew up in. And the life that they're facing now. When I was a kid, we didn't have metal detectors in school. This is back in the day when we had guns on racks in the back of our pickup trucks. Plain sight, not locked up. Sitting right there. You try to do that on school property now. See how that works out for you. What has changed? Have we progressed in society? Or has society gotten worse? Which is why we have to. Has something changed with the culture, possibly? Were we living in the Wild West back then and kids were just getting shot up like crazy? Well, because they step in to prevent things after the fact. And when we find out that, the next one happens again, well, why does this keep happening? Now we have, metal detectors, and we have police officers in the schools, and we have, how could this possibly continue to happen? We just have to crack down more. We just need to do more of what we've been doing, cracking down. We're not doing enough. We just need to do more. Never acknowledging the elephant in the room, which is the cultural problem we have. Now, I want to say this is it doesn't matter what your ethnic background is. It exists in every ethnic group, whether you're European or African or South American, whatever it is you come from. Your heritage, your history, your family history. The cultural issue is one of a self-centered gospel. Your lived experience, or your ancestors' lived experience. And there are people who carry things way too far. All you have to do is look at examples of a little bit of it can be salted into a church, into an organization, and you don't really notice it. But if you carry that philosophy to its fulfillment, you start to see how ridiculous it is and sometimes how evil it is. One of the things I'm going to talk about here is the something called Black Liberation Theology. I've talked about it before. I'm going to talk about it again. And I'll probably talk about it again. Because it is very prevalent in many of the urban, what you can call Black Christian churches. There is this idea at its core, its idea is that the oppressed people are the people of God. We are the ones who are oppressed, because this is all based on this idea that it's someone else that's putting oppression on you. It's the systemic racism in our country that's keeping you down. And that's why you can't get ahead, because all these other people out there are doing just fine, but they're keeping us down because racism. Systemic racism in our system. I would invite you to please present me with an example of legislation currently in place that is keeping you down racially. That points something out to you that doesn't and your ethnic background that doesn't apply to someone else's ethnic background. I just want to, now the only thing you're going to find here is things that you're allowed to do, special rights that you have that put you above someone else. Equal rights is one thing, special rights is another. And then the point here I'm having is, now maybe there's a good old boy club, maybe there's problems with some of these places that have, that they implement things differently. But when you have a city that has a Black mayor, and he's choosing all the, and he's come out and actually said it, he's browning the contracts. In other words, all the people he's hiring to do work for the city are all African American businesses or South American, Central American businesses, all minority businesses. In other words, we're anti-white people. We're discriminating against white men. We're not going to have anything to do with white man business, because that's the way it's going to be. Because we're going to do that. Because diversity, So they continue to do that, and that's okay, because they have special rights. if a white mayor came out and said that. Now, by the way, there's some talk about possibly Republicans winning the mayoral race in Chicago. This has happened before. Many, many years ago, I think it was after the first Mayor Daley, there was a Republican in there somewhere for part of a term. I'm not sure if he even served the whole term. He might have. The problem with it was the mayoral situation there. You can step in as the mayor of the city. The problem is the whole machine there operates under the Democrat banner. Everything from the city council, the town, you know, the head of the police department. You know, you can put your own man in there, you know, your own person in there as the chief of police. And his name could even be McDonald or Mr. Pembroke or O'Reilly. You could put any of those people in there as the head of. You're dealing with a system there that is intrinsically steeped in left-wing management and has been for so long that you'd have to go a whole generation to get it weeded out of there. Because there is a systemic problem within some of these big cities where they've been blue for way too long. And that's what happened to this Republican mayor. He couldn't do anything. Couldn't get anything done. Couldn't change anything. He was an abysmal failure because he just didn't have the council to go along with him. And that's the problem. Once you get that kind of power, even if you get someone in there who's a leader, they can't make the proper changes. And that's what would happen again. You don't have anything different going on there unless there was a sweeping change in the management of towns like Chicago and some others. They get in, they get themselves established, and they get their foothold put in there, and they start to replace everybody with people who are like-minded. Then the rigging begins, and then all the promises to people and all the, you know, things that they're doing they promise to do things for everybody. They come into office, they blame everybody, they blame the other side for everything, the media goes along with it, and they go it just goes downhill from there. Start spending money they don't have. Then they need to start requesting money. That's what Brandon Johnson's doing now too. He's saying the federal government needs to come in and pay for, you know, give us funding. We need funding for this stuff. We don't need police, we need funding to do all these programs. Because we need more programs, government programs. Well, government programs have been around for a long time. I don't really see where we're getting ahead of ourselves. The trend is not going the other direction. Oh, the crime rate's been down for a year. No, your definition of crime has gone down for a year. People are not feeling any safer on the streets. And that's why people now are saying, if you interview people on the street, in fact, CNN, I mean, even kind of shocked themselves. They were asking somebody on the street, of course, a black woman. And she came back with, we want more police on the street. I want my kids to be able to go out and play. This is, they pushed it right back in their face and basically said, you don't live here in this world. You live in your little apartment. You live in your little gated community. You don't understand what it's like out here on the streets. You come and live here in this place and find out. Every day you hear gunshots. So the mentality I think that we have to wrestle with here and deal with some of these people is how they, just the way they act, and ignore the real issues. And the issue is a cultural issue. It breeds a sense of, it's a cynical anger that seethes underneath the individual. And here's the thing, is it can be very subtle and still affect you in a way that you find yourself blaming someone else for your problems, for your lack of acceptance of your responsibility. And in the process of doing that, you end up destroying yourself. Because you're not building character. You're just you start to lose traction with any kind of momentum moving forward. Because you don't have anything to accomplish. You just assume that everybody else just, you know, jumped on the slide and went down. And it was easy. You have to climb up the slide. They climb up the ladder and you have to climb up the slide. No, it's everybody's climbing up the slide. It's just, there are some people who have ladders, or some people who don't. One of the things that Joaquin Jeffries recently said was, "We believe in a strong floor and a limitless ceiling." In other words, try anything you want to, you're not going to fail because there's this floor there. We're going to have a strong floor and a limitless ceiling. Okay, that's, part of the problem with the strong floor idea is, well, define what you mean by this strong floor. What are you talking about when you say strong floor? First of all, you know, they make these platitudes, always coming out and saying things. Now this mayor, we'll get into this a little bit, the mayor from Minneapolis where the shooting occurred, he says some things. We're going to get into that a little bit later because I got a clip I want to play. Try to get to that here real soon. All I'm saying is there's a cultural problem in our cities, and it's a cultural problem that breeds over, it perpetuates itself over years. This doesn't just happen in a few weeks. Now, the tide can be turned and things can be turned around. But I believe that for true cultural change, it's going to require churches to change. Because I think that's where the real battle really is, in my opinion. This is more of a spiritual battle than it is anything else. It's not just an ideological battle. But now to listen to the Mayor Fry from Minneapolis, you can sense the cynicism within him. This guy's a real piece of work. Anyway, he's a dangerous individual as well. He's come out to the forefront now. It's very possible he could be a presidential candidate. We'll get into that a little bit later. I want to talk about this whole thing with John Bolton. A week ago or so, John Bolton's house was raided. John Bolton was the former national security advisor for the president, for President Trump back in his first administration. I had a hard time believing they even put this guy in. Of course, one of the issues that they had was, you know, he was taking notes all the time of everything that went on in the office. He was the guy in the back in the corner just standing there. No matter what was going on, they could be eating lunch and he'd be over there taking notes, looking around the room, taking notes. Just weird, creepy stuff. And all of a sudden, he's a contributor on MSNBC and CNN all the time. Gee, isn't that interesting? These are people who hated him when he worked for George Bush, for W. Bush, the second Bush. He was representative to the UN. He was ambassador. He was all this. They still call him Ambassador Bolton, whatever. On CNN and MSNBC, all of a sudden, they're giving him a title. They wouldn't give Trump a title. They don't say President Trump. They just say Trump. They don't even bother calling him president. So Bolton, he's constantly being interviewed on there, and he wrote this book, The Room Where It Happened, or whatever it's called now. I think he's got this new book. He's out doing a tour with this whole thing and trying to discredit. Of course, when the raid happened in Mar-a-Lago, and this is back in, 2020? The raid happened 2021, maybe. Must have been 2021. I think. Maybe it might have been 22. I think it was 21. And so Trump gets his home raided. They picked up a whole bunch of stuff. They went through every room, everything in the house. Now, granted, this was an argument between him and the Department of Records, the or whatever the agency was called, the document, whatever. And they knew he, they knew where the documents were, and they knew he had the documents. The problem was they thought they should have the documents back. What do they care? They're just documents. They know where they're at. They're just, all they're going to do is curate them in a different place. What's the big deal that it's got to be in this place over here? Why can't he just have them there? You know that they're there. They're locked. They're kept in storage. They're kept in under highly secured area because he's president. He was former president. Now, what's coming out is that he had some crossfire hurricane stuff and some other things that were going on that he wanted to make sure those records were not destroyed because, you know, because the FBI would never destroy anything, any evidence. Of course not. Never happens. So they wanted that stuff back. So the FBI, of all things, comes in and raids his home. Guns drawn. Like, 57 officers or some ridiculous thing? They take all the documents, among other things. They make it look like they're strewn about the house. All these photo ops of everything that was going on. They come back, and, of course, there's this supposedly secret, you know, classified documents there. He was just keeping them, just laying around, throwing them around the room, you know, tossing them on the floor and rolling around. And, you know, thank goodness they protected us, protected our nation. This was top secret, so that our nation was, you know, he was probably going to sell those to some other government. Yeah, sure he was. Yeah, he'd be the guy to do that. Now, Joe Biden, he had documents that nobody knew were there. Nobody knew that they were missing. They were missing at a time when he wasn't even supposed to be taking them out of the place where they were supposed to be, let alone having them in his possession for 15 years or whatever it was. How does that happen, Joe? And he knew he had them because he's on record. He actually has audio of him talking about how he was writing this book and he was going down to find, he went upstairs or someplace to find these records. Well, these, you know, I'm not supposed to have these, but I've got this. He walked out of a skiff with these documents. And some of them he kept in his garage. And he wasn't raided. He wasn't charged. Well, he cooperated. There's a video of Merrick Garland getting questioned by some people about, of course, it wasn't anybody from CNN or MSNBC about it. They're questioning him about the whole thing with the documents and why he wasn't going to be charged with anything, but they were charging Trump. Well, because he cooperated. Oh, so if somebody murders somebody and they cooperate with the investigation, then you're okay with that. Well, we're not going to charge you anything. You cooperated with us, told us how you did it. That brings peace to the family. Just just face it. There's a double standard. Okay, just come out and say it. We can see it. We just say it. Try to call something that's not. But anyway, I need to finish up with this. Bolton. Let's just put it this way. Bolton's the reason. The media is not talking about the reason why they raided his home. The reason is very complicated. He was doing this thing where he had his daughter and his wife, I believe, were involved in this whole thing, where he would send them letters. Somehow he had them set up so that they could, because they weren't under investigation, whatever it was. I can't. Now he's under investigation, but he hasn't been charged with anything. He hasn't been arrested or detained or anything in this whole operation. They came and got some documents. Charges are probably forthcoming or event at some point. But he's probably going to face some consequences. He's probably going to go to court. Adam Schiff, Letitia James, and Fani Willis probably will go to court at some point over some of this stuff that they've done. I really hoped to see Letitia James, something happened to her. Because and Adam Schiff would be great too, simply because they've committed the same crimes that they were accusing Trump of doing. And they literally did commit the crimes. And it's on Well, allegedly. The crimes that they've been alleged to have committed are actually documented. People were wronged in the process. The banks were defrauded. It was fraud. What they're going after Trump on is both sides agreed and went along with it. There was no fraud involved. And the value of a home, the value of anything is subjective. I don't care what you got. You could have a gold coin, and one person really wants it, they're willing to pay more than someone else. That's where the value is subjective. It's one person says, I don't want that. It doesn't, you know, it's that coin represents something bad in my life. I wouldn't give you a dime for it. And the next person says, I'll give you $100 million for it. Value is a subjective thing. It's whatever it was just sold for. That's what the value of it is. And it's only the value represented by that person who paid for it. That's what it's really representing. All the money in your 401k is representative of what someone's willing to pay for it. And it could be, you know, multiple people. But that's what it represents. If nobody wants to buy it, then it's not worth anything. And it's kind of a weird mystical construct out there. Anyway, one last thing I want to talk about is this shooting that happened in Minneapolis. Now, I was kind of out of the loop while it was going on. I was busy with so many things last week, and of course went camping and was kind of disconnected, intentionally disconnected from life. I was still kind of paying attention to what was going on, but I wasn't really engaged in what was going on. And apparently this shooting happened a few days ago. Now, the mayor came out, this mayor, Jacob Fry, I think is his name. And now, make no mistake, this guy is a politician. I would not be surprised at all if Newsom ran for president, if this guy would be his VP. He just has just kind of appeared on the scene. And he's got these weird people behind him. There's a couple of weird people behind him. And then there's this, I don't know if it's a police chief of some kind or something to his left. I'm pretty sure that she used to work at Dunkin' Donuts. There's people behind him. There's one guy behind him that acts like he's trying to put words in his, it's like he's trying to mouth what he's saying, has this weird look on his face, and he's staring right at the guy. Now, keep in mind, he's staring at the back of his head. He's standing behind him. And he just has this weird, his mouth kind of moves along with the guy, with Jacob Fry, the mayor. And it's just weird. Now, the reason I'm saying pay attention to this guy is because he's speaking without any teleprompter. He doesn't have any notes. He speaks for about 3 minutes. I'm not going to play the whole thing. He speaks for about 3 minutes. And he's very, the platitudes. If you listen to the whole thing, it's just one ambiguous statement after another. Just a mishmash of, granted, he's trying, it's a very difficult situation. I get it. But he's trying to meld it into this political statement about gun control without saying gun control, because he doesn't want it to be perceived as being a political statement. However, it is absolutely a political statement. But he's trying to avoid it. It's very weird. Talk about weird. But this guy, he's got this dynamic that the Democrats are looking for. And I think then they're willing to throw anything at the wall and see if it sticks right now. So they're going crazy over Newsom being able to act tough on a tweet. That's what they're all about now. In the meantime, So this guy, I'm going to play. I'm not sure if I'm in the right spot here or not. I'm going to try to see if I can find, you know, let's go from about right here. This is about 1 minute into his little speech. I'll play this and see what you think. Now the problem they're going to have with him is he's a white man, so that's going to be a big problem they got right now. But let's just listen to this.
These were American families, and the amount of pain that they are suffering right now is extraordinary. And don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. It was the first week of school. They were in a church.
Now, that statement alone right there has a bit of a twinge of cynicism. In fact, I would say, many people will disagree with me on this, because of the rest of his what he was saying. This guy also, by the way, he looks like he could probably bench press almost about as much as Mamdani. The Mamdani press, they call it, where you have someone else lifting up your weights and you just have your hands on them. This is a statement I would never have made as a Christian believer, as a follower of Christ. I would never have made a statement the way he just made that. There is a twinge and there is a core of cynical, it is, you know, they say that there are no atheists. They're really just, you're not really an atheist. You're a, what do they call it? An atheist would say that they know that there's no God, and they know that. Most atheists who call themselves atheists would say that, well, just, I don't think there's any way to know that there's a God or not. And that is something different. I can't think of the word. Help me out on that one. You can call the show. Call the show right now and let me know. But I won't be able to answer the phone because I'm on the show. But the number is 812-379-8778. Call, text, leave a message, leave a text. Might talk about it on the show. Let me know what that word is I'm trying to think of. Agnostic? Is that what it is? Agnostic. That's probably the word I'm looking for. So don't bother calling the show now. No, you can still call the show. No, please do call the show. Send me your suggestions, thoughts, whatever you got going on. So so he ended up making this statement, and I thought, well, the first time I heard it, I was like, this is, that sounded like he was actually mocking the power of prayer. And I don't have any other way to explain it. I just, that seemed to be the spirit that was coming across. Was he's basically saying these kids were literally praying. So thoughts and prayers don't matter right now, because these kids were literally praying and they still got shot. In other words, where was your God? He didn't hear your prayers. That's kind of what this seemed like to me. Now, maybe he didn't mean for it to come across that way, but it did. To me. And absolutely, you know, after all, my reality is what you should go along with, right? Hey, I'm an alligator. Okay, well, we need to accommodate you with fresh, you know, chicken and snakes and stuff for your meals. Provide you with aquatic activities. I will hereby be referred to as Alligator Man. My pronouns are Alligator and Gator Gator. You can just call me Mr. Gator. Anyway, it's just because you think you are something doesn't make it so. And doesn't mean you can impose on everybody else that they have to agree with you in your little fairy tale land. I'm sorry. in your little make believe land over there. I'm sorry, not sorry, really. I just pretend what you want to be. That's fine. You want to act like you're Superman, jump off a building. Okay, well, just don't fall on me. But let me know how that works out for you. Or not, because you're not going to be able to. This guy is, you know, he goes on. Let's listen to some more, because it actually was worth listening to.
These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground. They should be able to go to school or church in peace without the fear or risk of violence, and their parents should have the same kind of assurance.
Now, I want to talk about something here. This is very important. I kind of agree with everything he's saying, except for the way he's saying it. Now, here's the issue. When we say we should be able to do this, they should be able to go to, in a perfect world, or basically, you're talking about life in heaven, where the wolf will lay with the lamb. This is not the world we live in, buddy. And it's not the world you're creating either by doing what you're doing. We can have, of course, whenever they cry peace and safety, be aware. I have some issues with the whole National Guard thing. I do have some issues with that. I'm not going to get into it on this particular show. I might do it. I'm not sure it's going to be a show tomorrow because I'm going to be on the boot, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get up early enough to do a show before I to get it posted and all that stuff from the marina. And Monday, probably going to be taking the day off on Monday as well because I'll be sailing again. Probably not going to have an opportunity to do a show. However, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe Friday, there'll be a show next week. Just to give you a rundown real quick. Now, however, having said that, I have to say, I think I coughed earlier. I was just looking over my panel over here. I think I pushed the wrong button. I might have coughed in your... Anyway, I usually try to push the button if I got a cough or clear my throat, and I don't think I did. I think I just coughed right in. Anyway, So this idea that we should, these parents should be able to do this and we should be able to do that. Well, yeah, everybody, we should be able to. But that doesn't mean we can just live this happy-go-lucky life without the thought of security, without the thought of, hey, what if? You know, critical thinking has to be a part of our life. I mean, it shouldn't be the thing we worry about all day long. But you need to have some preparation. It can happen to anybody, anywhere. You know, I was thinking about this morning. This whole idea, there's been a lot of talk about critical thinking and how people have lost the ability to do critical thinking. And it is something I don't teach in school anymore. Now, we used to actually literally work through problems in school, in certain classes we had, especially social studies and some others, where you would work through critical thinking thing, and even stuff in church. We'd have stuff that for the youth group and stuff. We'd have youth meetings where we'd go through this stuff where you had to do critical thinking. What if you do this and you do that? And what in the world, you know, kind of explain what's going on in the world, especially with food and hunger and everything else, and how this would all work. And it was interesting how they taught that kind of thing back then. Now, it's at the age of 17, I started, actually, I might have been 16. I think it was 16 or 17. Well, I started at the age of 15. I started training martial arts. I wasn't formal, though. And then I got into actual formal training, and I'm pretty sure I was 17 when I started that. I took it very seriously. A couple of years later, I had my black belt in Taekwondo, Chung Do Kwan. And I ended up... doing that. At the same time I was working on that, I also, in the middle of there somewhere, while I was working on that, I became a scuba diving instructor out in at the Patty Gold College back in the day. This is back in the late 70s, early 80s. They had this school called the Patty Gold College. You go through this whole thing. I was out in San Diego where the main offices were for the PAD. It's called Professional Association of Diving Instructors, PADI. It's there's that and now. They're the two bases, basically, the National Association of National whatever it is. Nautical Association, whatever. I don't know what NAWI stands for. Something National Association of Underwater Instructors, whatever it is. The whole idea here was that when you go out there and you go through this whole school thing, and then you walk out the door and you basically could start working at a dive shop, which I did a little bit. You were certified scuba repair. You know, you could service and all regulators, especially U.S. diver stuff. You're certified by U.S. divers to do all kinds of regulator repair, tank inspections, the whole thing. You could do all that stuff. Research diver, rescue diver, recovery diver, master diver, all the stuff that you were certified to do walking right out of the school. And so every rating that they offered basically is what you had. Photography. So I did it. I did that. I was a kid when I did it. Then started getting into flying and became a pilot, of course, it was kind of one of the major, but a lot of things that I've done have required critical thinking. This is, everything you're doing requires critical, the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? How can I prepare for this if that happens? What am I going to do if that happens? It was always that way. Now you're saying martial arts, what does that have to do with critical thinking? If you're a good martial artist, you're always looking at the possibilities of, if I walk out the door right now and someone jumps me, I need to be aware of that. What am I going to do? If I get into a situation where I have an injury of some sort, what am I going to do? If I'm in a street situation and someone jumps out and stabs my arm, my good arm, my powerful arm, the one I use primarily, it's the one I'm strongest with. Now I'm left with my left hand, my left arm. Or they stab me in my legs, which I was kind of a kicker. I wasn't very good with my hands. I was much better with my feet. And it had a lot to do with, I raced bicycles as well, BMX, back when it was kind of a thing in the early days. Soccer, BMX, all that kind of stuff. So my legs were kind of my thing. And I had a really good stretch. I could kick people in the head. I could jump up and spin around, kick cups off people's heads. There's just stuff like that I was doing. And it was, but that requires critical thinking. What do I do if I can't, and for my black belt, my formal black belt testing. So you go through this thing called a review board, which is, that's where you really do your test. Black belt testing is more of a formality. It's kind of a graduation ceremony. It's a presentation of all your skills. Well, right at the very beginning, I pulled a hamstring. Popped. Everybody in the room heard it. I was pretty much out with my legs the rest of the time. Couldn't do much with my legs. I was forced to use my hands. This is critical thinking, is what if I lose the ability to use my legs here? What if I only have this much to defend myself with? What am I going to do? So the critical thinking did play a part in martial arts. And of course, teaching it was even a bigger deal, because I like to put things into people's heads like that. Like, what are you going to do if this happens? What are you going to do if that happens? What if this guy cuts your hand? Now, what are you going to do? We did just all the critical thinking that goes into all. So those kinds of skills, I kind of just grew up with that. I was always steeped in it, especially in aviation. Aviation is a culture of what ifs. It's a culture of critical thinking. It becomes second nature. You don't even think about it. After a while, your mind always goes 3 steps or 4 hours or 5 steps or 10 steps into the future. Well, if this happens and that happens, and then this happens, if I do that, then I'm going to be in this situation and that's going to happen. So you're always thinking through all those things kind of automatically. It just kind of unfolds. And before every flight, we do a briefing, especially when the pilots are, if two airline pilots sit down together, who've never flown together before, you go over all the standard operating procedures, review everything. You review everything about the particular flight that you're going on, the weather, the mechanicals, the alternates, so whatever it is, the NOTAMs for the airports involved, anything that's unusual, any threats involved. First flight of the day, that's might be my first flight today, might be my first flight with you, but I've been flying for 5 days. This is my day six. I'm tired. I'm an old man. Please, don't scratch the airplane, kind of thing. We get into that kind of situation, and we have to think through all the possibilities of what happens if this happens. What if we lose an engine on takeoff? Are we going to come back here? Can we even come back here? Do we have the weather to come back here? We need to go someplace else, somewhere else. Well, I'll guarantee if we're on fire, we're going to go to the shortest place there is, or the closest place there is, and it's, we're going to call out what that is. And of course, nothing ever happens that you plan for. It always happens differently, but you have a plan, and you can always alternate that plan or alter the plan. So it's one of those things where at least you've gone through it. You thought through it already. So it's now it's just a matter of thinking through it a little bit, changing that thought and being willing to be pliable with it.
Well, I don't know. Let me pull out the book here and find out what page that's on. But as we careen into the mountain,
which has happened.
These are the sort of basic assurances that every fan.
Sorry, dropped my mouse on the table here a little bit and caused it to click. These are the basic assurances. All right, folks, so that's what I've got for today. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not sure there's going to be a show tomorrow. Probably won't be a show tomorrow, as far as I know. Could be, but I doubt it. If there is, it will be kind of limited, probably on my laptop in the boat. My wife will probably be sleeping on the boat, which is a little bit difficult to have a show without keeping her from waking up. So I don't think she'll be able to sleep through it. Unless I stick some earplugs in her ears. Or maybe I could put earplugs in my ears. Does that work that way? I'll put earplugs in my mouth. That might work. I don't know. Folks, I want to thank you for listening. Again, call the show, 812-379-8778. Call or text, or you could go to google.com/voice and type the number in there. Folks, God bless. Have a great rest of your day. I will see ya. That's what it is. See ya. Yeah.